Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Hi, Jinx. I don't know if you can hear the motorcycle in the background, but motorcycles are the bane of my existence. Anyway, today's guest is a very talented performer, entertainer, show host, and all-around seasoned drag queen. And just like her namesake, she's so much prettier from far away. It's Monet Exchange, and we've got her here, so buckle up for some hijinks.
Forever Dog.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi, Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by drag queen, podcaster, recording artist, and spokesmodel, Monet Exchange. Hi, Monet.
Hi, Jinx. Did I get the hi right? Hi, Jinx.
Hi, Jinx. Yeah, it was perfect. Well, I have to say, Monet, I'm intimidated having you on my podcast because you host your own streaming show, The Exchange Rate. I've been your guest
twice, and honestly,
flipping the script.
Both times you won Exchange Rate, they were so delightful because you are legitimately one of the funniest people ever, and you're just so funny, and it was great. Both times were great. Obviously, I loved the time in studio more, but yeah, they were both phenomenal.
Well, that in studio one, I show that video to friends sometimes of like, can you just watch what I do in this interview? And we skip ahead to when we were playing a trivia game.
Oh, yes.
And the reward for the trivia, for getting the answers right, was y'all took a shot. But since I don't drink anymore, I pulled out my weed vape pen and yes, I would take a hit of that. Now, what we've noticed upon reviewing this clip
what? is that
I start smoking like immediately, or once I have the one puff, I'm just continually smoking, and I clock myself like taking hits throughout the rest of the interview, and there reaches a point where I'm so stoned that I start getting tongue-tied, and I think, oh, I've got to get rid of this weed pen because I cannot get any more stoned than this. And out of nowhere, like a bear catching a salmon in a river, I smack this weed pen into the audience.
Yes, I remember that part.
And so now I watch that. Have you ever seen the movie Beaches?
Yeah, of course I've seen Beaches.
You know when CeCe Bloom watches herself and she's like, don't say it. Don't say it, CeCe. That's become one of my CeCe Bloom moments in life. So thank you for giving that to me.
Of course. Thank you for being there for it. I appreciate it.
Who's the most wild guest, the most like it blew your mind to have that person as a guest on your talk show?
Oh, it was 1000% RuPaul, because I mean, you and I both know Ru does not do loads of canoodling with us after the show. So when it was
you mean you weren't there for game night?
I want to be invited to that fucking game. I know Got Mick is gonna go. I know Got Mick is gonna.
I've only heard rumors of this game night. I don't know if I even fully believe the legends of.
No, they
RuPaul's
definitely happen because like other select celebrities that told me about it. Like even among like celebrities, they're like, I want to be invited to Ru's game night. So I think it's definitely a thing. But I probably since COVID, they probably don't do it anymore. But if they do, I know Gottmik is gonna get an invite, and I'm very jealous. Anyway, RuPaul was probably I was so excited about it. It was coming to Pride season. He was doing press for his talk show that was going on at the time, and then they were asking me like who I was thinking about for guests, and I was like, well, I mean, I was like, I know this is not gonna happen, but I just want to say this in this meeting so that I know I said it, and like whatever happens, happens. And I was like, I would love to get RuPaul, and they were like, I think we can make that happen. I was like, really? And then like 2 weeks later, they're like, Ru's books. And I was like, shut the, it was only like my third, I'd only done like two episodes. So it was only like my third episode. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is insane. And I went backstage to the green room, and he was like, so he's sitting in his like space, whatever. And I walk in, because I meet all the, as you know, I chatted with all the guests before. And I walk in, he goes, Monet Exchange, this bitch done got a talk show. And I was like, oh my God. It just felt so good. And it was such a fun, but Rue was, it was incredible to have Rue at the show.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, what a coup. You know, I remember season 5 when Alyssa, when they were beginning to produce Alyssa's Secret. And Rue took Alyssa as her date for, as Rue's date for some award show or something. Not date, you know.
Right.
But like they walked the red carpet together.
Really?
And Alyssa is just grinning from ear to ear.
Whoa.
And there's these little moments here and there where, yes, Rue intermingles with
children. But you know what? But there are so many girls who go on the show and think that Rue owes them something after the show. Mm. I'm like, bitch, he brought you to Hollywood and he put you on international internet television. That is literally the only thing that you are, that first of all, you won't owe that. You got that. You know what I mean? But some of these girls swear that Rue, they should be getting Rue's number. Rue should be checking in on them. It's like, no, like what is this delusion? Tyra Banks ain't chilling with the models at Craft Services. So, you know, like, what are y'all talking about? It's crazy.
I've just always been grateful that I've had nothing but positive, pleasant interactions with Rue. And, you know, it's been here and there throughout the last decade. You know, I might do Rue's podcast here, and then I guested on Drag Race one season as a coach, you know. So I've had these little fleeting moments, but they're always so pleasant. And whenever we're just shooting the shit, I'm like, am I really just making small talk with Rue right now?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like I got to tell her backstage on AJ and the Queen that I performed Call Me Mother and how hard it was to learn the words to that song. And Rue was like, I don't think I ever learned the words.
Oh my God. I think I'm All Stars 4. I think that came up in conversation too, and someone said Call Me Mother, and he was like, and it was something to that effect of like, bitch, I still don't know those words, or something like that. That's so funny.
Yeah. And that's arguably one of my favorite RuPaul songs. That one and Peanut Butter.
I want to see, anyway. Is there a link to, I need to see the footage of you doing Call Me Mother. I need to see it. Like, I need it in my
face. I ended up not lip syncing it. I ended up just dancing to it because I was like, better to just like make a choice not to lip sync to it than have everyone clock me like watermelon bubblegumming through it. But it's such a ridiculous number, Monet. I was dressed as Mom from Futurama, the character Mom from Futurama, doing Call Me Mother and When You're Good to Mama. And so I start out in the big, like, old lady fat suit, and then I throw it off, and it's just, and I'm talking no corset, it is just my body in a purple cat suit. And and then it's 3.5 minutes of me doing Call Me Mother, doing what Jinx calls voguing, which is not voguing.
You know what? It's voguing to someone, and that's all that matters.
It's me like doing a little cat, 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 cow, and then followed by like a minute of catching my breath, and then another 10 seconds of cat, cat, cow.
Word, bitch, word.
I enjoyed it. It was a fun tour. It was Halloween. You know, Halloween. What other When else should you make an ass of yourself if not Halloween?
I love that you and I think because you and I like this too. Like, we really make it a point to always, like, not always, but like for the most part, when we go out in drag, we always wear some corsetry because like, and again, there's this new school of queens who don't, which is fine too. But I just love that you and I have that in common. We are, and Bob as well. A lot, I mean, even they, people like to say, oh, well, I'm skinny, I don't have to. I'm like, bitch, Naomi Smalls wears a corset every time she gets in drag. It doesn't have how big or small
Alaska
you are.
Alaska too. I mean, Alaska's corset she could use as a hula hoop half the time. Like, <it's, laughs> but I think there is something about, like, I feel most in drag when I'm wearing a corset.
For
like,
sure.
I don't feel like I have to think about being in character, because when I have the wig at the heels and the corset on, everything else just comes naturally.
For sure, for sure.
And I mean, there was, you know, I used to be a thin little Twinkie queen, and I got away with just wearing a, you know, a Spanx bodysuit to hold my pads in place, and that was it. But those days are gone, and I don't miss them, because I think my new motto right now is, I'm older, I'm fatter, I'm sober, and I'm at the top of my game.
Well, unlike you, I've never been a skinny Twinkie anything. That can literally, I have been this size since I was 2 years old. So I've never lived that fantasy. But, you know,
good thing. Around 2 years old. 6'6". Oh, I just love you so much, Renee.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So you've got this talk show on the Build Network. You also, of course, are just climbing the charts in the podcast arena with Sibling Rivalry. So you and Bob, would you consider yourselves chosen siblings? Is the family connection part of the drag persona, or does it run deep? Is it a part of life?
Oh, as soon as the podcast stops, I don't talk to Bob until the next episode. I have no desire. I don't want to see her, speak to her. Like, no. No, Bob and I have been best friends since 2013, and it just started, Bob started helping me out with drag stuff, and we just built a relationship through there, and Bob got on Drag Race, and then I got on Drag Race, and it just, you know, our journeys seem to parallel each other oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And we really are, like, that thing of chosen family is so real for us, because people think that we are real siblings, and we are not. Bob and I are not anywhere close to being real siblings, but it feels like we are in under the umbrella of chosen family, because Bob is, we have chosen each other to be family. Like, I talk to Bob's mom often. We know each other's families. Like, we really are that. And Bob is one of my biggest support systems, and I his, and he really, we are there for each other all the time. And we fight, like, as if you listen to the podcast, you know, we fight a lot, just like you do with your older brother or your older sister or your older sibling. So yeah, we really do embody all of the things in the under the siblingness of it all. And we really love each other.
I completely understand and relate to all of that, because it's funny hearing you list, you know, moments and significant things from your friendship and relationship with Bob, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's just like Dayla and I, you know. We are the white Bob and Monet, and everyone says so.
Wait, do you see, I feel like you and Dayla don't fight a lot though. Do y'all fight a lot?
Well, we fight like how you fight from the Pacific Northwest, which is lots of backhanded compliments and passive aggressiveness, you know? I was just thinking about the fact that there's so many parallels between you and Bob and your chosen sibling-ness mm-hmm. and mine and Dayla's, and we were on opposite coasts forming these relationships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then it Drag Race took these relationships to a worldwide level, and here we are. This sisterhood for all to see.
And honestly, the journeys are similar. If Dayla, because we, like, full tea, we all know, if Dayla would have stayed on All Stars 3, she would have won. And it would literally be the same thing. You would have won your original season. Bob won his original season. Dayla won All Stars, and I won All Stars.
Okay, now you're speaking it into existence, and, like, tomorrow there's going to be a Reddit sub... plot about this. I don't know. I don't go on Reddit. Subplot? What are those called?
Subtweets.
Subreddit.
Subreddit. Yeah, subreddit. Yeah. Yeah. Girl.
Well, you brought it up. You won All Stars. So let's talk about that a little bit. Now, I have to imagine there's a lot of similarities, but also a lot of things that are very different. I've never been on an All Stars.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was on season 5. I did win the first time, so.
Okay, well, so are you one of those girls? So do you think that Drag Race and All Stars are different shows?
No.
Bob,
I mean,
thinks they
I
are.
Think I know that Bob thinks that, and sometimes I'm like, "Well, she's on to something," and sometimes I'm like, "You're just a contrarian asshole." But no, I think, I mean, I definitely feel like All Stars is a spinoff. You know, it has its own flavor. It's not a sequel. It's a companion piece.
right. Yeah.
And it's just a different vibe when you already know everyone, you know?
Yeah.
And once you become part of the Rue Girl pantheon, it's hard not to know everything about all the other girls, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
What was the biggest, like, positive difference between doing your first season and doing All Stars?
The biggest positive difference, I would say I came in with more sense of self. I feel like, mm-hmm. even I do this thing on my YouTube where I, like, go back and review all my old audition tapes. I did season 6, season mm-hmm. 7, I'm doing season 8. And, like, in all those seasons, and even season 10, I was being me. But especially in the ones before I got on the show, I was trying to do, like, this, like, drag thing, like, what I thought would be, like, how I wanted people to perceive me. Where in season 10, I was being myself, but I still see hints of that. And going into All Stars, I was, like, fully myself. I was like, I'm gonna be big and loud and do all the things that I love about myself and do. Mm-hmm. So I think that was probably the biggest change. Is like season 4, I felt, like, fully realized and, like, a full drag queen person creature thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of funny because, you know, I remember one of the catty little things we would say in the workroom to each other is because, you know, everyone's at different stages with their drag when they get their chance to go on Drag Race. Not everyone's been doing it for 40 years or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Everyone's at different level of polish. And I remember some of the queens from my season, I won't call any of them out, but saying things like, you should already be done by the time you get here. Like, this is not finishing school. This is not charm school. And it's kind of like, are we ever done? You know, because I thought I knew everything about drag 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and now there's lace front eyebrows, and I can't keep up.
Which, that is a fad, or I am not into that at all. I think Plastique Tiara is the only one who I've seen do it successfully. Bob tried it, and they were literally like caterpillars on his forehead. It was, even Brooklyn Heights used to do it, and she was like, girl, no. Like, I stuck. I look
Bob,
crazy.
Makeup expert Bob, the drag queen, tried it, and it didn't work
girl,
out.
Girl, that's the thing. I'm like, people already talk about your makeup, and now you have a YouTube series where you're an anti-beauty guru. Bitch, you've been an anti-beauty guru, okay? You definitely are not the beauty guru. So I'm like, what are you doing? Anyway, yeah.
So, and what would you say was the hardest the hardest difference between the first time and the second time? Or was it all positive?
No, the hardest difference is that everybody had money. Like in season 10, like a lot of us, you know, we were regular like queens. Like either you're working two nights a week. Some didn't work in, as queens at all. I was working six nights a week. Like we were all like trying to make it. Whereas in All Stars, bitch, everybody's been touring the world. They've done the ITD tour. They've toured with Holy T and performed at GAY, and they've done the, like they've made money. So everyone is coming in like, oh, bitch, I have coins. But you know what? What I will tell you is that just because you got coins don't mean you have taste. And I think that that materialized a lot.
Yeah, I think sometimes, I mean, once you go on Drag Race, there is an impetus to like enter the next stage of your drag, whatever that may be. I think for some people, it's about becoming more polished. For some people, it's about kind of like finding their niche in the drag community, you know, there's so many of us now, and nowadays, you know, like the diehard fans are finding queens to celebrate that haven't even been on Drag Race.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to find your place or you're going to get, folded into it.
For sure. I was just on Instagram earlier and I realized because of Drag Race is obviously a hugely impactful show, and especially in terms of drag and queerness, whatever. I was looking on Instagram and on my Explore page, a queen called Sagittaria popped up and I was like, is this? And she's a skinny white, she's from Spain, so she's probably a skinny Spanish white passing twink with like the long blonde platinum Aquaria. And it was literally Aquaria, but not Aquaria because no
en
shade.
Espanol.
And Espanol. No shade. Aquaria is so immaculate and she's so put together and she does everything so well. And this queen seems like a younger queen. They're still like finding themselves or trying to replicate someone else. And it was just so interesting that she calls herself Sagittarius. I was like, this is wild. Can you imagine if someone was called Minx? And they
Minx
only wore
Johnson.
Minx Johnson. They only wore I don't know, burgundy hair, and they sang live, and like, could you imagine? That would be so weird. That would be so crazy.
Well, my first question is, were they doing Sagittaria before Aquaria?
No.
Or no? So they started afterward. Yeah, I mean, it kind of sounds like, oh, are we? So, I mean, I guess that's where we're at. I know that I was inspired to do drag and that my drag is similar to queens that came before me. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of had the decision to be a redhead independent from the fact that Varla Jean Merman is a strict redhead.
No, you stole her act. We all know the story, baby.
That's the thing is you can't say that it wasn't an influence because she's always been a part of my drag education. So maybe she did have an influence on that and maybe it wasn't a conscious decision. But if we're at the point now where we're literally parodying other
but the gag is Jinx, she's not even Sagittarius. She is like, I'm like, girl, if you're Pisces, be Pisistria or something. But
Pisistria.
Leondria. I don't know. Toria. I don't know. But she's not even a Sagittarius. Which is I'm like, Aquarius is an Aquarius. Aquaria is an Aquarius. Like, you know, I mean, well, at least do that.
I'm going to give our new sister in Spain. Is it Spain? Hispania? That's Spain, right? That's This is in Spain, right?
Yeah, yes. In Spain.
I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and say I'll wait until we can see what she brings to the show.
Yeah.
To make any sweeping judgments about.
Yeah. Listen, y'all know Jinx is a nice gal. I am a rotted, nasty, fucking dumb bitch. So no shade to Sagittarius. I just find it so interesting.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there are some out there who would say that you are rotted and
oh, for sure.
Too
for
opinionated. Sure. But I just find those things, I mean, it's difficult right now because where are we at with comedy? Are we allowed to still make jokes at all?
I don't know.
I have been a big advocate for let's update the world of comedy so that we are not So the joke doesn't have to be at someone's expense. But then there is the fact that, like, we are drag queens. We have to be able to kind of run our mouths a little bit. Yeah. That's like what we've, that's a part of our history.
Yeah. And you know what? And you were someone who really made me think about that. Because when I did that infamous Haters Roast tour, which I went to go do my Madonna video where I was in it for literally 0.32 seconds, baby. Oh, yeah. When I left the tour, Jinx, when we started Haters Roast, it was my first Haters Roast. I remember you made the conscious thing. You're like, I'm not going to make these kind of jokes. And I was like, how? Then what is she going to do? And your set was great. It was so good. All of your jokes were not at people's expense, but it was still one of the best sets on the fucking tour. So I didn't even know that was possible until I saw you do that. And I was like, oh my God, maybe I should rethink how I do my jokes. And I have a lot.
Well, I mean, I think there's a big thing about, like, you know, my goal on the roast tours has always been, I don't want to make jokes about groups of people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to punch down. I don't want to further marginalized groups. Mm-hmm. But for my sisters on stage who have consented to me reading them, mm-hmm. you know, we can still make jokes about each other.
Yeah.
And so all my jokes were really about the character of each person, not yeah. about their demographics.
Which is harder to do.
It's
way harder to craft jokes around like a person and not the experience, but like who they are. You know what I mean? So, and that's mm-hmm. way harder to do than anyone can do a fat joke. Anyone can say a black joke, an Asian, whatever. But to craft jokes that aren't just that is way harder to do. And I was like, Jinx better fucking do it.
I remember when I told Latrice, I will say I did, you know, make a couple, you know, I think tastefully funny size jokes about Latrice. And the reason being there is that when I told Latrice, you know, I'm not going to make any fat jokes because I just don't want to contribute to that. Latrice raises one eyebrow and leans into me and says, "You're so stupid. How are you going to go on stage and not make one fat joke about me?" She was like, everyone's going to think you're dumb.
Yeah. Like you said, on a roast, everyone is consenting to this. We all know what the plan is. Mm-hmm. But I just think it was just really brilliant of you to do it that way. I was like, what? This bitch going to come up here and tell a patty cake story? What she going to do? And the first night, I was like, I was eating my words. I'm like, this was brilliant.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, the first time we ever did the roast, I was really trying to... I was like, they told us that we could roast anything. It didn't necessarily have to be the girls on stage. But what we quickly found out was that's what's fun to do, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So I think I wrote a set about airports and what I hate about airports. And then Bob went after me and was like, I hope the airports aren't in the audience tonight. Everyone watch out. Jinx has got the hot takes on the airports. And then I was like, nah, I need to make some jokes about these on stage with me. But I've always felt like by the end of the Haters Roast tour, those people, anyone I do that tour with, become some of my favorite people to perform with because it is such an act of vulnerability and trust when you allow your friends to get up and just put you on blast like
oh,
that.
Oh, for sure. 1,000%. Yeah. I mean, but honestly, now, that's literally me and Bob's, our entire relationship is just a roast. We're like constantly roasting each other. So, and also that's like I'm bringing in my family. My family is very like that. Well, like I literally I know you're looking at me, you're probably like, yeah, you do. But I have really thick and tough skin. And you're like, you look real reptilian today. That's how I was raised. Like, that's our dynamic. Like, we've always, like, we just make, like, just, so it really takes a lot to hurt my feelings or get at me. Like, it really takes, like, a lot. I don't want to say more than the average person because I don't know what everyone's threshold is. But, like, regular jokes just don't work on me. Like, I like people, at roast, I want people to go in on me and make me, because I love laughing at myself. It's my favorite thing.
I really do, too. I think I can be sensitive sometimes when it's strangers making just really mean comments about me because I'm kind of right. like, what did I do that made this person feel so passionately angry at me that they had to find a way to make me see their opinion? And, you know, I was definitely more sensitive to it early on. You know, after I've been doing this for like 9 years now, I wouldn't have survived if I didn't just like learn how to compartmentalize hate, you know?
That's wild that you've been doing it for so long, Jinx.
But I mean, that's only a handful more years than you. I don't know. Time is so irrelevant these days. It's like you've been doing it at this level for less time than me, but you like we're peers, you know, like it doesn't really matter how long you're doing it. The talent floats to the top.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm like, don't make me list all your accomplishments again. Now you are a singer, a dancer. You're trained in opera.
Yeah.
How have you balanced that love, these contrasting loves throughout your life? Have you found ways to work opera into your drag and vice versa?
You know, that's interesting. I will say I have not really done, like the last time I did opera seriously in any real way was when I was at Portland Opera to Go over there in Portland at the fucking Portland Opera in downtown Portland.
How many in times my little Portland? Portland?
Yeah, in your little Portland, which I love. Okay, I don't know. Portland, in my opinion, is one of the states in America that has some of the best dick. I had a great summer in Portland.
I think, yes, I agree. And I think also you're biased because you're pretty into like the hippie stoner boys, aren't you?
For sure, yeah.
That's why our trade keeps overlapping when we tour together.
Oh my God, that's so good, Tim in Australia.
We had this time on tour in Australia.
I forgot about that. Yes, please tell it.
We were both talking to the same guy. We had just gotten into the next city. I don't remember a lot of the details, but anyway, I was talking to this guy on Grindr and almost had him over, but then decided I really needed a nap more than I needed dick that afternoon. So then when I'm going for our call for the bus later, that guy's just in the hotel and we end up in the elevator together. And I'm like, wait, we didn't end up meeting up. What's he doing here? And then he kind of just goes, oh, hey, Jinx. So I was also talking to Monet. Oh, wait, this was Australia. So he was like, I was also talking to Monet.
Can I tell you, I still talk to him to this day. And like every time I go to Australia, I meet up with him. And like he's always like, I'm going to move to America. We're going to get married, all this stuff. I still actually talk to this guy often.
Do you know, I mean, like, I am no stranger to tour trade, to road trade. Mm-hmm. But there's also times where I'm just like, okay, Grindr is not bringing bringing enough good into my life that I should keep this app. Mm-hmm. But I always do, because I would say, you know, there are those people you meet through Grindr that you wouldn't have met otherwise that you are so glad you met.
For sure.
And Grindr has just as much potential as any other thing
for sure.
to bring really good people into your life.
Girl, a lot of my friends that are married or in long-term committed relationships, bitch, they all met on Grindr. They all met on Grindr.
We literally use what tools are available to us, you
for
know?
Sure, for sure.
I mean, that's why bars are so important to queer people, because for the longest time, bars were the only place we could congregate.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, that's a big part of our queer history. But it's like, you know, the new wave of like family friendly gays, they might look at bars as like a house of debauchery, but it's like, that's all we had for the longest time. Don't call us sluts for upholding the history of sex positivity we possess as queer people.
Yes, I'm sorry. So yeah, so porn was like,
we were talking about Portland, opera.
Oh, I forgot we were how we got on
about
dick.
Opera.
Portland, when I was in Portland, that was in 2012 and 2013 was the last time I did opera in like any like real way. And I really want to find a way to integrate it back into my act. But I'm also like, I have not had a voice lesson since I graduated college in 2012. So I'm like, but also male opera singers like basses and tenors specifically, their voices mature. Like when you're 30, that's when your voice is finally like here. So in theory, I'm like here now. So I was talking to Bob. I was like, I want to take like 6 months off of drag and just concentrate on just doing like voice lessons for real, practicing. Because that's another thing. People are like, oh, you can just take voices. Like, no, but the how you get really good at singing is you take your lessons and bitch, you're practicing every day like it's a 9-to-5 job. Like, because again, they're two tiny muscles the size of dimes in your throat that make you, that allow you to sing. You know what I mean? So it's like you're working those muscles, and when you don't do it for a while, you lose that. So I want to do it more. I really want to, and I've gotten so many offers from different, like Houston Grand reached out to me about some stuff, and the Met did about some stuff too. But I'm like, I can't go into these places sounding crazy with some of the greatest opera singers in the entire world. Like, no, I'm not gonna embarrass myself like that. So I really want to do that for myself. I really want to, Jinx. Thank you.
I want that for you too, because I remember thinking that to be an actor, I had to give up drag. And I really was prepared to give up drag to focus on my acting career. But after college, most of my work in theater was playing female roles because they knew I did drag. And let's face it, I wasn't like getting called in for a lot of butch macho roles anyway, you know? So
I could totally see you playing the lead in, you know, Green Lantern. Like, you could be Green Lantern.
You know, Ryan that Reynolds stage who? Hit, you know, that Broadway See,
but
Jinx, classic.
But they were missing you. If you were in it, baby, they would have been, it would have been a box office smash.
But yeah, I think one of the wonderful things about the progression of drag and the evolution of drag is its ability to commingle with what was previously thought of as the legitimate art forms, you know? Yeah. I mean, if we're going to let people become famous for doing, you know, morning routine videos, then there's no reason a drag queen can't perform in the opera, the Philharmonic.
Sure. For sure. You're right. I agree. I honestly agree.
Now, you have never been shy about standing up for yourself or clapping back online. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about social media in general? And this is, we were talking about this briefly before. I don't know how much, I don't want to date this episode by bringing up the recent drama you've had. Mm-hmm. But if you need a space to talk about it, I'm here to listen.
Well, you know, I haven't really done any, besides on my podcast, and honestly, we kept it like Patreon exclusive because that's another thing. Like, it was always, I got enveloped in all this drama with Tamisha Iman and the Vixen, whatever. And then when I put on my Patreon, people were like, how dare you put this behind a paywall? I'm like, so you're trying to profit off of my trauma, and bitch, I am gonna fucking monetize off my goddamn trauma. It's not for free. If you want to hear my opinions about people talking shit about me, you can pay for it. And they did. So, so I haven't really talked about it, but I mean, So the crazy thing is this whole thing happened, you know, a few weeks ago, whatever. And I just don't, it came out of nowhere. And when all that was happening, I was getting so many texts. Like, I can count at least like 18 girls like were messaging me like, girl, I don't know what's going on. And I just want to let you know, you're literally one of the nicest queens I know. You are like, I don't know where this is coming from. This person clearly doesn't know you. So, and these are queens who I am super familiar with. I work with a lot, and some who I met like once or twice, you know what I mean? But the general consensus was, you're a nice person. This person is crazy. So when I see stuff like that, because then you do those mental gymnastics, right? You're like, well, am I this like nasty trolly person? Do I have these really nefarious intentions? And I didn't realize that. I'm like, no, I really don't. So it was nice to get those affirmations from friends and associates, but I try my best to stay out of it and to not comment on it. But sometimes you also have that thing of, if I don't comment on this, are people reading this thinking it's true? Like, I need to comment on so people know like what my side is.
I think a big thing we're adjusting to and might be related is when there were fewer seasons, it's like the new season would happen, and then like next week I'd be gigging with those girls. Mm-hmm. You know, the community was still small enough. I remember like when Bob was on season 8, it was not like, you know, halfway through season 8 airing, I was already working with all the season 8 girls, you know? Mm-hmm. We all got to know each other in person.
Yeah.
And there's just countless girls from like season 11, 12, 13 that I've never met once in person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always, whenever there's a new crop of girls, I send them a hello message and just like, hello, I'm here in case you ever want to talk to me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I literally available. Did that too, because I had all of them on my show because I did like the big build interview with all of them. And literally when the cameras cut, and they, I was like, hey guys, this is, I know, I've been in your shoes, a lot of girls have. This is a very tricky thing to navigate. You are getting probably getting offers and managers. I was like, here's my number. Any of you can call me or text me anytime if you have any questions about stuff or anything I can do to, if you, like, you know, whatever to help you navigate it, because it's a very hard thing to do. And only at this point, speaking for America, there's only been like 200 of us out of the 180 million people live in America that have this experience. Yeah. So I was like, hit me up, and any advice I can give you or question you have, I'm willing to answer. Like, I've always been that. Like, that's who I was. I was trying to do for them. So it just seems so. It just seems so crazy out of left field.
I feel like it was easier, you know, a while ago for us all to be really connected, and now we've got the obstacle of COVID.
Yeah.
We've got the obstacle of there's so many of us, and you know, there's arguably tons of work to go around too. You know, so. People are really, really busy. It's like it used to feel more like a tight-knit sisterhood. And now I don't know that we can achieve that in the same way we used to be able to.
That's a good point.
So I bet there would be some experiences that might have been different if we got to know each other in person before, you know, we were expected to kind of like talk about each other, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to go on the pit stop and talk about these girls in a way that's informed other than just what I see on the show, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas if I were to go on a podcast and talking about like Alaska and detox and people I've known for years, my opinions are going to be very different than girls on the new season I haven't met yet.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
maybe some of it's just getting lost in translation. That's me trying to make sense of how my sisters could be fighting. We all get along.
And that's the thing in my life. I'm not mad until I'm mad. Like Patty would tell you that Bob is like, I'm not mad until I'm like really mad. Like it takes a lot to get me mad. When I'm mad, bitch, I can't shut up and I won't stop talking about it. I'm like, fuck you. I don't like you. And that dress really was ugly. And you know what? Your grandmother should have died. You know what I mean? Like that's where I go.
But you know, that outspokenness, that fearlessness that you're describing is not only directed at your sisters, your colleagues, but you're also extremely opinionated on social justice issues. And I don't know if saying extremely opinionated is the way I meant to say it. It sounds like she won't shut up. No, what I mean is you're very vocal about your opinions. And, you know, it's not always easy to be an entertainer and have your opinions be freely offered because, you know, people always warn you, you're going to lose followers and you're going to lose fans your opinions. But it's like, do I want those people as my fans if they don't agree that this is fucked?
You know what? And honestly, and I literally just experienced that like recently. Like I posted about the stuff going on in between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And I post about it on my Twitter and people like, a lot of people are like, thank you for saying this, like end apartheid and all that stuff. But they had a few people commented like, I can't believe you don't know what's going on. And I'm like, this is the equivalent of someone of like during the height of Black Lives Matter movement in America. Mm-hmm. And someone being like, guys, I just want the police and the black people to get along. Like they can just coexist and be friends. It's like that's very All Lives Matter. And this situation is basically the same thing. It can't be that. These people are living in horrible. They're literally being slaughtered and killed. So you can't have an All Lives Matter approach to that. And I'm sorry if you unfollow me because I don't agree. Greenest All Lives Matter-esque thing, I'm going to say how I really feel about it, you know, because it's just wrong. And I got a lot of people being like, I'm unfollowing you. I can't believe you support free Palestine. I'm like, you sound crazy writing this. Bye. I don't want you to follow me.
Well, and I think with this issue specifically, I think some people are finding it difficult to separate the people who share a faith and a country's government.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just look at our own government as an example, like since when do we think governments are infallible when it comes to the decisions they make? And so we can critique the actions of a government without putting on blast the entire people joined with faith, you know?
Yeah.
I know that that government and a faith-based people are very intertwined, but at the end of the day, they're a government, you know? Yeah. We should be able to critique them like any other government.
For sure. Agreed, Jinx Monsoon. Agreed.
So I do have some, less heavy questions to ask you.
Okay. This is I honestly, also, your voice is very soothing to listen to. So I can't wait to listen back to this.
I really appreciate it when people say that because I find my voice to be a little grating myself. But but you know what's funny? I was recently binge watching The Nanny, and there's this recurring joke about, of course, Fran Drescher is known for her high pitched Long Island nasal voice. Mm-hmm. They have this recurring joke where she says, but some people find my voice very soothing. And so now anytime someone says your voice is soothing, I'm like, oh, is this like the 1 in 10 people who finds Fran Drescher's voice soothing?
Mr. Sheffield, no.
Oh, God, but I love that show. It's so good. It's so clearly like our 90s version of I Love Lucy.
For sure. But also, I haven't rewatched Nanny recently, but a show that I do watch often is Will and Grace, and also Living Single. And those two shows specifically, like, I watch them now, and I still laugh, like, belly laugh, because even though it's obviously so long ago, the jokes are still so funny. And that speaks to how good the fucking writing of these shows were, that even though, at this point, Living Single is 30 years ago, the writing is still so good and still so funny and still so current.
I've binge watched a lot of sitcoms in the pandemic. I binge watched Frasier. And then for the first time ever, I watched Cheers, because Frasier is a spinoff of Cheers.
Is it?
And then I know so many people don't know that, but it is. He's a character from Cheers originally. And then I binge watched The Nanny, like I mentioned. And now I am so, this is like the weirdest thing I think I've ever done in my life. I'm binge watching the show Wings.
Oh my God. It used to play on the USA Network. I used to watch Wings. I used to watch that show when I was a kid. Oh my God.
It's so crazy.
It was like a pilot in like an airport, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it's a small, a small puddle jumper airport in Nantucket. So when you've gone to Provincetown and if you flew on the puddle jumper, it's like that little airport. And I'm not in Provincetown this summer, obviously, it's making me very nostalgic for my Provincetown summers. But ultimately, when you look at what the show is, it's got nothing for me. I don't know why I'm watching it. It's about like, it's a will they, won't they situation between this like tight, buttoned up pilot and this little sassy lunch counter waitress. And then his brother's like the womanizer, like smooth talking guy. And then they've got the, you know, the token foreign person from Italy. And then they've got the jerk who's everyone's friends with, even though everyone hates him.
Right.
And then they've got the idiot savant and the old lady. It's a kooky cast of characters. It's
and
now very,
one black
very
person.
Straight.
They all white people living in Nantucket.
Well, it's Nantucket, but but it's literally got nothing for me. But I've been enjoying dissecting the sitcom formula, you know, the like setup, the 1-2 punch of the writing, where it's like, it's always like the broken expectation, like, oh, he's been trying to kill that cricket for hours. I just can't wait until he's dead. Yeah, I want that cricket to be dead too. Oh, yeah, I was talking about the cricket, you know?
yeah.
It's like, so wait, you want that person dead? And we're all just laughing. but you can dissect the Golden Girls. It's perfect sitcom writing.
I've never seen the Golden Girls.
Oh,
I've never seen the Golden Girls. Not a single
that is like obligatory gay education right there.
I know, that's what everyone says. Well, apparently not, because it was apparently in the first episode of first season, there was a gay character that just got written off. So how gay is it?
There, gay characters pop up here and there, you know?
But it was one that was going to be apparently like a mainstay, like one of the core cast. And they're like, girl, we do not need his faggoty ass bobbing around here. Bye.
Oh my gosh. I want to talk about Golden Girls. I haven't asked you one of my lighthearted questions, get to it.
Okay.
This is my favorite question to ask. Who is your celebrity crush?
Ooh, celebrity Jesse Williams from Grey's Anatomy.
Okay, I never watched Grey's Anatomy.
I don't either, but I know, but that's the show everyone knows him from. I've seen him other things. He's like the light-skinned black doctor guy with like the green eyes. He's beautiful. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful man.
And is that like a romantic crush? Is that like a, you'd marry this person?
I would marry him because, there's Jesse Williams. Oh my God, that's look at that man. Sexy. Okay, so here are my things. I almost wanted to call you Julia for some reason. Jinx, he's tall. He's like 6'1". That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, he got a good job. And again, I don't care about a job, but I watch his Instagram stuff and he's very ambitious. And ambition is so sexy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care if you are a busboy, if you're a CEO, if you're a skateboarder, as long as you're ambitious and passionate about that thing, that's very hot to me. He's that.
Yeah.
And he used to date a woman who was a plus size woman and she was voluptuous like me. So that means if he into her, he'll be into my night. So I'm into it.
Do you have more of a lust based crush? Like, if someone were to be knocking at your door right now with the express purpose to have sex with you and then leave, who would that person be?
Ooh,
still Jesse Williams or?
No, I want to marry Jesse. Just come in and fuck me. Or honestly, me fuck them because that's how happens. That's how it often be for the type of because we mentioned him earlier, and his body is immaculate. Ryan Reynolds. So if Ryan Reynolds came, knocked on my door, I'm like, "Hello, hi," and he just came inside, stepped in a little bit, closed the door behind him, pulled his dick out, and asked me to suck his dick. I would absolutely do it. I would drop on my knees and I would gobble it, swallow it.
I can say I agree, but he'd have to be dressed as Deadpool.
With the scars and the scabs and everything included.
Well, I mean, it's a pandemic. He'll leave the mask on. But yes, I had never seen the Deadpool movies until recently. And then I got what it was all about. For so long, there were all these like Deadpool porn parodies popping up. And I was like, what is it about Deadpool? And I'm like, he's a very sexy character.
Yeah, he's very sexy. And he's also sexually fluid. He fucks guys, girls, non-binary folk.
Love that.
Yeah, he's into everything.
Hearing you say, I'll gobble his cock.
Oh.
Was the first time I was like, if Ryan Reynolds were to hear this interview, would I feel good about that?
You probably will, girl. Bob and I talk about celebrities sometimes on our podcast, and they like mention us on. They were like, "I heard." I was like, "What are you? How are you listening to this?" So he probably will. Hey, Ryan. I just moved to LA. I have my own place.
And a very immaculate looking closet behind you. You got all your shoes color coordinated.
Oh yeah, I love having my shoes color coordinated, girl. It takes me out.
This is new for me that I actually have space to hang up my costumes and they're not just wadded in a ball in a pile in my basement. So there have been some plus sides to spending all this time at home. And Mama, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, and I'm telling you, in the original key, Jennifer Hudson version, not the Jennifer Holiday version. Sorry to the older fags out there, but the Jennifer Hudson version, honey.
I heard, I don't know how true this is, but I heard this from one of my musical theater teachers, that Jennifer Holiday, who originated the role on Broadway, yes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That show was so physically taxing that she said all she had the energy to do every day was sleep all day, wake up in the middle of the day, drink like a 2 liter of Pepsi, take another nap, and then wake up and do the show. That's like all she had the strength to do every day is the show and to drink some Pepsi.
Well, I mean, honestly, that show is such a big show, Jinx. Like, I feel like,
yeah.
Like, two of the biggest numbers in the show, and honestly, two just big things for anyone in general, happen within like 10 minutes of each other. She does, yeah. And I'm telling you, the whole thing happens, and she does I Am Changing literally like 15, 20 minutes later. It's crazy.
Oh, just those two songs?
Plus all the other fucking singers. Like, it's crazy how much, I can imagine being Effie.
What was a show that was like that for you? Have you ever been in a production or done a touring show? What would you consider one of your more physically and emotionally draining performance experiences?
You know,
every time you talk to Bob.
You know this, girl. Every conversation with Bob, I feel like I just ran a marathon. I feel like at the end, I'm literally like tired. I'm physically exhausted, which we literally have to do a podcast tonight. So I'm not looking forward to that. I never did a bunch of music theater. But when I did opera stuff, I'm a bass. So anybody trying to hear a bass sing that much, in any opera I've done, the bass has at the max one aria. Magic Flute is a different, you got two, and like that's it. Like, even in Bohème, just a little vecchiati maratenti towards the end of act three and you're done. Like, there's no big singing for basses in opera, not unless you're doing Mephistopheles or something like that, but so yeah.
What was your energy level like during All Stars? Would you say, which one was more physically and emotionally draining, your first season or All Stars?
Oh, season 10 was way more emotionally exhausting because, A, I didn't know what to expect. And I used to make fun of all of y'all before me. So every season before season 10, I was like, girl, these bitches are weak. If I ever went on TV.
How could she? Why'd she go down the runway wearing that outfit? And then, lo and behold, Spongegate.
That and also, I'm like, these bitches are weak, crying on TV. Like, what are you, 5 years old? Ugh, girl, these girls have no backbone. They're sorry and sad. Cut to, I literally cried like four times on season 10, just sobbing and boohooing. So, you know, this Drag Race is just so, it's emotionally and physically exhausting. And yeah. So season 10 was like, season 10 wore me out. Like, it wore me the fuck out.
Yeah, I was pretty exhausted during season 5. I was exhausted and I was barely, I barely had an appetite the entire time. Mm-hmm. And that's, I will say, one of the things that we talked briefly about weight stuff and being I was once a twinky little twinky twink. When people comment on my weight today or how my body has changed since Drag Race, What frustrates me is that in our society, to be skinny is praised and to be large is demonized. And, you know, we're making progress where that's not true across the board.
Yeah, yeah.
But in general, like, people think if you're skinny, you're healthy.
Yeah,
but I was like barely eating. Like, when I'm healthier now at the size I am now than when I was like,
yeah,
eating half a meal a day because I was too stressed to lift a fork to my face, you know, or I'd be eating in a corset and I could fit like half a chicken breast in my system.
Or the food sits all in your chest and you're like, girl, I'm literally gonna, if I tilt my body too much one way, I'm gonna throw up because my food is not even going past my fucking esophagus.
It's not making its way down. Did you say my Mephistophagus?
Mephistophagus. Yeah. But I have to say, I don't have the same experience. When I'm stressed, girl, I probably eat triple the amount I was supposed to eat. I grew up a fat kid. I live my adult as a fat, like, I've always been that girl. But then also, I look, like, at times in my life, like, for example, like, around 2011, around 2012, 11, something like that, when I look back at pictures, I remember thinking to myself, I look so gross. I feel so fat. I hate her. And then you look back, I'm like, oh my God, I was way smaller than I am now. And I'm like, oh God.
I can agree. You know, like, I don't think even at my thinnest did I ever feel like, oh, I'm sexy and I've got a great body, you know?
Sure.
And I think that might be a common denominator with drag queens. Not to say that all drag queens have the same body issues, but I think there is to a certain extent, we're not satisfied yet until we start doing drag. And whether that's expressing our femininity or celebrating our body in a different way, you know, because there are definitely drag queens who are ripped and fit and tight.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's got to be something missing in your life when you decide to cross that threshold into drag, you know?
For sure.
So I remember thinking, like, being very unsatisfied with my body back in the day. And now I look at pictures of myself then and I'm like, you had no idea how good you had
girl,
it.
Girl, that is true words, girl. True words. Like, I feel that so hard.
And I think a big thing I was doing back then was comparing my body to other people's bodies. And because I always felt like I wasn't thin enough, but I was the thinnest I ever was. And so now I feel a lot. Now I feel, even though my body is very different, I don't compare it to anyone else's body. And that helps me love my body a lot more. You know, not saying that I am not actively thinking, maybe I could lose a pound or two here and fit into one of my old gowns once more and give the kids a thrill, you know. But for the most part, you know, when you don't compare yourself to someone else, it's easier to feel satisfied with who you are. So let's let that be the lesson we leave our listeners with today. Do you have anything you'd like to plug beyond the myriad of projects we've discussed?
My hair. Can someone give me the number to a doctor? Plug these follicles.
My experience was great, honey. I'll give you my guy's call.
You see, but number. Do they do black people hair though? Girl, can you imagine I come out with a full head of white people hair? People are like, Monet, what happened to you?
It's your hair.
Okay, we'll talk.
They take your hair and then at the 11th hour, let's discuss hair transplants. But well, I just want to thank you so much, Monet Exchange. You're a wonderful friend. You're a talented drag queen, and you've always treated me like a sister. So it's a joy to get to just sit here and talk with you for an hour for other people to listen to.
Really,
as if we didn't have enough ego.
But this is really great. I love this. This felt very inside the actor's studio to me. I love that.
Oh, that's what we're going for. So thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
We'll get the rights to bring up that show. we'll see. Thank you so much, Monet Exchange. And thank you all for listening to Hijinks here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday. So make sure to search for Hijinks on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at the Jinx on Instagram or Jinx Monsoon everywhere else. Where can they follow you, Monet?
They can follow me at Monet Exchange. That's M-O-N-E-T, the letter X, the word change.
Across all platforms.
Everywhere, honey. If you had a Monet Exchange Instagram, I reported it, I blocked it, and I called the people and got my name. So
I thought about seeing if I could get Jinx Monsoon on Instagram, but now I'm attached to the Jinx. I like the story.
I like it too. I like it.
Well, thank you everyone for being a part of today's episode, and I'll see you next Wednesday for some more hijinks.
Forever
To listen to Hijinks ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Make sure to follow at Forever Dog Team and at Mom Podcasts on social, and rate and review Hijinks 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hijinks is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, produced by Big Dipper, editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.